This is World Lutheran News Digest, an audio news magazine bringing you a look at significant events in worldwide Lutheranism. WLN Digest is produced through the facilities of Worldwide KFUO, a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
Today on World Lutheran News Digest,
I'm World Lutheran News Digest host Kip Allen. The Bible tells us that to be Christian is to be persecuted. Jesus himself said in Matthew chapter 24, "Then they will deliver you up to tribulation and put you to death, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake." We see proof of persecution on the increase today. The United States Commission on International Religious Freedom is a bipartisan federal commission created in 1998. Its role is to monitor global religious freedom violations using international standards. The commission is charged with making policy recommendations to the President, Congress, and the State Department. Every year, it issues a report analyzing the status of religious freedom worldwide. The most recent release was on the 2nd of May. Regrettably, the commission finds increasing religious persecution is on the rise worldwide. I speak with Commissioner Dr. Robert George about the commission's latest findings and recommendations.
And now today's Fast Track.
I'm Buzz Aldrich with news in brief of interest to Lutherans worldwide. In the United States of America, the Supreme Court has remanded Zubik v. Burwell concerning the HHS contraception mandate in the Affordable Care Act back to the lower courts. It did not decide whether or not the mandate violated the Religious Freedom Restoration Act and instead punted the case down for further proceedings. Zubik v. Burwell is the combined lawsuit of the Little Sisters of the Poor, Priests for Life, and several religious universities that claimed providing abortion-inducing birth control to employees via insurance plans was a violation of their religious beliefs. In the unanimous ruling, both parties were urged to figure out a plan via the lower courts that can accommodate everyone. The legislature in South Carolina in the United States has banned abortion after the 19th week of pregnancy. The South Carolina House voted 72-29 in favor of the ban, while the Senate agreed to a compromise back in March. South Carolina's pro-abortion lawmakers still disagree with the measure, but conceded that the current bill that's expected to be signed into law by Governor Nikki Haley is the best they could do. Similar laws are in effect in 12 United States. From the Independent Evangelical Lutheran Church in Germany, Pastor Gottfried Martens, who works at what is being called the Trinity City in Berlin-Steglitz, reports Zelk Church members are working more than ever with refugees from Iran and Afghanistan over the past many months. Pastor Martens says the ever-growing community is urgently needing to expand their work into a larger premises in order to keep serving the refugees. The Zelk group is now telling its story on a Facebook page, on which Pastor Martens writes that the effort begins with the cultivation of a new community hall as part of the church outreach to those who have been displaced.
World Lutheran News Digest will be back right after these messages.
Hi, I'm Pastor Matt Youngblood Clark from Ascension Lutheran in St. Louis.
And I am Pastor Jolly John Lekumsky from St. Paul's in New Athens and Trinity in Darmstadt, and we welcome you to listen to Wrestling with the Basics.
Matt, let go of me, man. No, it's not real wrestling. We're just talking about Bible issues.
No.
Oh, 9:05 Saturday mornings, 8:50 a.m. KFUO.
Hi, I'm Pastor William Whedon, LCMS Director of Worship. Jesus said some hard things in John 6, and lots of his disciples turned away and stopped following him. He asked the 12 if they wanted to go too. Peter responded for them all, "Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life." Words of eternal life, those are the words your Jesus has for you. Join me for the next broadcast of Thy Strong Word, 11 a.m. Central on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Cross Defense, the apologetic show for inquiring minds of all ages. Cross Defense airs Mondays from 2 to 3 p.m. On air, online, on demand, right here on Worldwide KFUO.
Cross Defense. Mark Hawkinson, host of Jubilation on Worldwide KFUO. Coming up this Sunday from 1 to 4 p.m., I'm going to be sharing not only great Christ-centered hymns and songs, I'm going to be also providing various scriptures for you all about the subject of a real hope. See, when yours is centered in Jesus totally, then you have a hope with no minus sign attached to it. So join me Sunday for great music and a hope with no minus sign. That's Jubilation from 1 to 4 p.m. on Worldwide KFUO.
This is World Lutheran News Digest.
I'm Kip Allen, host of World Lutheran News Digest. With me today is Dr. Robert George, who's the head of the U.S. Commission on Religious International Freedom. Dr. George, could you tell me a bit about yourself and about the commission?
Yes, well, I have the honor to be the chairman of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. I'm also a professor at Princeton University, where I teach philosophy of law, constitutional law, and moral and political philosophy. I'm serving my fourth and final year as a member of the commission. The commission was established by the International Religious Freedom Act of 1998. That same act created, in addition to the commission, a desk in the State Department focused on religious freedom and a special ambassador at large for religious freedom. The ambassador currently is Rabbi David Saperstein. Rabbi Saperstein, as it happens, is a former member and indeed one of my predecessors as chairman of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. The act in 1998 created all of those institutions in order to elevate the place of international religious freedom in the formation and execution of American foreign and diplomatic policy. The idea behind the legislation was that certain concerns, such as economic and trade concerns, or military geostrategic concerns, would always have a place at the table. There would always be a constituency. There would always be a lobby for those concerns when foreign policy was being developed and executed. And that's good. Everyone agrees, of course, on the importance of trade and military security. But what was needed, in addition to those things, was a place at the table for religious freedom, so that the United States would regularly and reliably be on the side of the persecuted and the victimized, those who, on account of their beliefs, were being abused by governments with whom we do business, sometimes our own allies, such as Saudi Arabia. And so Congress took the step of enacting that statute, creating, as I say, among other things, the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. The commission comprises nine individuals. They are appointed by different officers of the government. Three are appointed by the President of the United States. The other six are appointed by the leaders of the two houses of Congress. It's bipartisan. There will always be four members appointed by public officials of one party and five of the other party. The five will be the party of the president. But they're not appointed to play a partisan role. Religious freedom ought to be a nonpartisan issue, and whatever disputes about it we have here in the United States, we should all be in support of protecting people abroad from having their heads cut off because they're Christians or Yazidis or Turkmen in the Middle East being subjected to imprisonment or enslavement because of their beliefs. The truly horrific crimes against religious freedom, which we in our country are blessed not to have. We have our own disputes over religious freedom. They're important, very important, but not at the level of the kinds of abuses that all Americans are opposed to and are concerned about in the international domain. So the work of the commission is not partisan work. It's meant to bring our country in its foreign policy to a position where we really are reliably fighting for the rights of conscience and standing up for victimized members of religious minorities, persecuted people of conscience.
So the commission actually produces documents and positions that are used as a tool for U.S. negotiations with other countries in a variety of different ways.
Yes, that's correct. Our principal obligation is to advise. We advise the President of the United States, the Secretary of State, and the leadership of Congress. We also, it's a very important part of our work, we also inform the public. So we issue press releases on important matters of religious freedom. We put out study papers, information sheets, and then annually we release a report on the state of religious freedom in the world. And we issued that, we released the report for 2016 yesterday.
I've glanced over the report, and I've read some of the other peoples who have read it and had some comments. And it looks like the status of religious liberty in the world has declined rather markedly. Is this correct?
Yes, that's true. Things are not going well. In fact, they're going the opposite of well. The situation for religious freedom internationally is deteriorating. That has been going on for several years. And we've even seen some deterioration from last year when we did our 2015 report to this year. So despite our efforts and despite the efforts of a great many people in the non-governmental sphere, faith groups, human rights groups, religious freedom advocacy groups, things are going in the wrong direction. And in many different places, certainly in the Middle East, in Syria and Iraq, where Christians and others are being so brutally persecuted by the Islamic State. In Africa, places like Nigeria, where Boko Haram, another ISIS-affiliated terrorist organization, is persecuting Christians and even some of their fellow Muslims in Nigeria. The situation is deteriorating in China. Rather than getting better, it's getting worse for Uyghur Muslims or Falun Gong or members of the Christian house churches. Things are getting worse in Vietnam. Things are certainly getting worse in Pakistan. Things, instead of getting better in Cuba, which people hoped would happen as a result of our opening to Cuba, are worse for dissenting people, for prisoners of conscience, for people of faith. So I wish I could give you better news, but the news is what it is, and it's not good.
Could I ask you, sir, what are some of the specific cases of oppression by government? I understand that there are non-governmental problems as well, but do governments specifically oppress or legally oppress their own religious groups?
Oh, yes, and this goes on in many, many nations around the world. Look at China, for example. Here, in the name of the atheistic communist ideology of the Chinese regime, people are victimized across the board. I mentioned the Uyghur Muslims. That's the Muslim community in China. The same is true of Christians, whether they're Catholics or members of the Protestant evangelical house church movement. The same is true of Falun Gong, which is a local Chinese sort of spiritual and health institution of civil society, a non-governmental institution. China's a prime example of a regime that oppresses its own people, no matter what religion they are, and they oppress people of any religion. Look at Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is supposed to be an ally of the United States, and yet Saudis who do not conform themselves to the official, very extreme Wahhabist interpretation of Islam are persecuted and discriminated against. So are non-Muslim guest workers in the kingdom. There are thousands upon thousands upon thousands of Filipino and other guest workers who are Christians. Many of them are Catholics in Saudi Arabia. Yet, they cannot build a church, even a small chapel, for their worship anywhere in the entire Saudi peninsula. They cannot even be publicly found with a Bible, or they will be arrested and subjected to imprisonment. Minority Muslims, members of the Ahmadiyya Muslim community, for example, who do not accept the radical Wahhabism of the Saudi Sunni regime, they too are discriminated against and persecuted, sometimes simply thrown in jail for practicing or preaching their particular faith. Look at Pakistan. Here's another example. Pakistan's a democracy, and yet, and an ally of the United States, and yet we find the persecution of anybody who falls outside the official Sunni Muslim line.
They've actually got these blasphemy laws that I understand have come under severe criticism, and it can be used against anyone. They can simply say, this person has insulted the prophet, and that would be sufficient to bring them to trial.
That's right. They are used against anyone, but they're particularly used against dissenting Muslims. That is, Muslims who do not subscribe to the version of Sunni Islam that the Pakistani regime holds. So once again, members of the Ahmadiyya Muslim community, Shia Muslims as opposed to Sunni Muslims, they're persecuted. Members of the Baha'i faith are persecuted. Certainly Christians. We know all too well about the situation for Christians because we've had cases of churches being burned, with people burned alive in the churches in Pakistan. There was a terrible incident just a couple of years ago in which dozens of people were murdered during a religious ceremony, a Christian religious service, when a church was burned in Peshawar. So the situation is very bad, and very often it's governments themselves oppressing their own people or minorities within their nations.
Now, isn't the Pakistani government supposed to, by their own law, protect religious minorities?
Yes, that's right. Although there are problems with their own law, because their own law, for example, forbids Ahmadiyya Muslims from publicly identifying themselves as Muslims. It deprives them of even passports, access to passports, if they profess themselves to be Muslims. And, of course, they believe they're Muslims. They cannot in good conscience deny that they're Muslims. They have no choice as a matter of conscience but to identify themselves as Muslims. They believe in the Quran. They regard themselves and understand themselves to be Muslims. Yet if they give any expression to that belief, they're brutally persecuted. And the Constitution itself provides, in Pakistan, provides the basis for their persecution.
I believe the commission has also issued a report saying that there's a problem with textbooks, with school books in Pakistan.
Yes, that's right. And here the problem is the use of school books that truly demonize people of other faiths and create in young people the kind of hatred that expresses itself all too often in the end in violence, as well as discrimination and other forms of abuse. It's certainly within anybody's right to teach their children their religion as they see fit. But when you have the public behind textbooks that teach children that Jews, for example, are terrible people, lower than animal, vicious, not to be trusted, threats to the community. Well, we know all too well from human history what comes of that kind of demonization. It's one thing to criticize another religion, that's fine. You believe your own religion, by definition, you think that there must be something wrong about the other guy's religion. It might have a lot of truth in it, but you have to believe that there's some falsehoods. That's a matter of logic. But plant in young minds true animus and hostility toward the people who have different beliefs is to put in place the kindling from which the fires of violence eventually erupt.
I have observed a number of children's programs on the Mideast Media Research Institute's website. And some of these are just horrifying to me, where these are programs that are aimed at children, and they are just vitriolic in their hatred for non-Muslims, and especially toward Jews.
Yes, it's horrible. And I'll tell you something. For many years, our allies, the Saudis, were exporting textbooks that had some of this terrible hatred-inspiring material in them. They were exporting them to Muslim-majority countries in Africa and around the world. Our commission very severely criticized the Saudi practice after doing a comprehensive study of the Saudi texts. And partly as a result of that, the good news here is that the Saudis have revised those textbooks very significantly. There are still problems, but they're not nearly as bad as they were. And yet, we still have the problem of the old textbooks being used. So the Saudis have revised the textbooks. The new textbooks are better, at least not as bad. But the old textbooks are still in use, and the Saudis are not demanding them back or replacing them with the new textbooks in places like Sudan or Somalia, places to which they've exported the textbooks for use in the madrasas.
But this would be a case where the U.S. State Department was able to issue to use some sort of pressure to get the Saudis to at least give lip service to the problem. But my understanding is that Pakistan is in a different situation, even though they are egregious in the violation of religious liberty. The State Department is apparently not applying the pressure that has been recommended. Is that true?
Well, I'm going to have to ask you to direct that question to the State Department. But let me tell you what I can say.
Okay.
Speaking in my role as chairman of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, if I were speaking to you in my personal private capacity, I might have a little more to say. But speaking as chairman, I can tell you that we have, as a commission, for many years, strongly urged, and I mean strongly urged, the U.S. State Department to designate Pakistan as a CPC, a country of particular concern, designated as one of the world's worst offenders against religious freedom, with China and Saudi Arabia and North Korea and Iran and the other worst offenders. The statute calls for the designation of the worst offenders as CPCs. Certain consequences follow from that. But the statute calls for those designations where a regime is guilty of ongoing, systematic, and egregious violations of religious freedom. And there's no question that Pakistan does qualify under those criteria. So we have consistently, year in and year out, urged that Pakistan be designated in the same way that the State Department has designated, rightly designated, Iran, Saudi Arabia, North Korea, China, and some others. And yet, that designation has not been made. Just a few days ago, the State Department issued its designations for this year, and 10 nations rightly were designated. 7 nations that we recommended the designation for were not designated, and one of those nations was Pakistan. And our commission believes that if there's one nation above all the others that deserves to be on that list, deserves to be designated a CPC, if you could only pick one, you were going to pick the worst offender not currently on the CPC list, you should pick Pakistan. So when you talk to the folks, when you interview somebody at the State Department, you could remind them that the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom has for many years been urging this designation, and you can ask them why that designation hasn't been made.
Well, I suppose certainly do that. That would make a very interesting program. I'd like to ask, sir, how the public can find out more about the commission's work. And I know that the report is available freely for anyone to download and to read. Could you tell me about that?
Yes, the report is available at our website. The website is www.usurf.gov. Now, USURF, that is just the initials for U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, USCIRF. So your listeners should go to www.usirf.gov. And there you can find not only our report for 2016, but our past reports, our press releases, our studies, our op-ed pieces that we've released over the course of the last year and going back for several years in our archives. If there's a country you want to learn about, if you want to learn about the religious freedom situation in Cuba or Venezuela or Saudi Arabia or Pakistan or Iran, China, go to our website and you'll find very readable reports on all of the different countries. If people do this, they will be able to inform themselves in a way that will assist them in exercising their duties as citizens when it comes to voting, when it comes to making their views known to their own public officials. There are some leaders in Congress who are doing a great job in fighting for religious freedom around the world, both parties, by the way. But there are lots of members of Congress who are not lifting a finger. And your listeners need to know whether their representatives and their senators are in the first group doing a good job or in the second group not lifting a finger. And to inform themselves so that they'll be able to ask the right questions, just go to our website and get the information. It's absolutely free. It's public property. We're a U.S. government commission. So go to the website, inform yourself, and then act on what you learn.
An organization like ours, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, has representatives all over the world in many, many different countries. if we see instances of religious persecution or some sort of unfairness like that, can we relay that information to the commission? Can any American citizen overseas who sees this bring it to the attention of the commission?
Yes, you can. We want to know. And you can go to the website and you'll see how to contact us. We want to learn what people of faith know, what they are experiencing all over the world. Some of our best information comes from diaspora groups. It comes from dissident groups within different countries. It comes from churches and other religious organizations that are operating in the various countries. And we'd love to hear from the Missouri Synod.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. George. I appreciate you taking time out of your day to explain the situation, as wish the news had been a little bit better, but that's your job, is to find out what the truth is, and that's our job, is to try to get the truth out there.
I do appreciate it, and I appreciate everything that folks in the Missouri Synod are doing for the cause of religious freedom. I know that the Synod is deeply committed to it. I want to give a shout-out to my friend, Dr. Matthew Harrison, who's not only my friend, but a fellow five-string banjo player, bluegrass banjo player. And I know he does a great job. He's a great apostle for religious freedom, and I think the world of him. And I'm just glad that he's in a leadership position with the Missouri Synod.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. George. I appreciate it.
Good. Thank you.
World Lutheran News Digest may be heard every Wednesday at 2:30 p.m. and again at 9:30 a.m. Saturday Central Time on Worldwide KFUO. It may also be heard anytime streaming online at kfuo.org. Join us again next Wednesday for another new edition of World Lutheran News Digest. I'm your host, Kip Allen.
World Lutheran News Digest is a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. WLN Digest is produced through the facilities of Worldwide KFUO. You can also listen to WLN Digest on demand at kfuo.org. To correspond with World Lutheran News Digest, email news@kfuo.org.